This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
There is poverty, there's unemployment, there's economic hardships, but we don't agree that economic situation only can explain the violence. But when it is combined with political rhetoric that blames foreign nationals for all the social ills in the country, migrants become the target for this kind of violence.
That's Dr. Jean-Pierre Misago, xenophobia expert on the recent outburst of violence against foreign migrants in South Africa. Details coming up. Also, Sudan's new prime minister is expected to announce his cabinet today, and Pope Francis makes his first papal visit to Mozambique. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, looting, burning of vehicles and assaults continued in some parts of Johannesburg and Pretoria today, with South African police struggling to prevent the recent outburst of violence, much of it directed at foreign migrants. Hundreds have been arrested and the official death toll stands at 5, with scores injured. South Africa is being criticized around the world for the xenophobia, especially by African leaders. Nigeria has recalled its High Commissioner to South Africa and is boycotting the World Economic Forum on Africa being held in Cape Town. Several countries have issued travel advisories for South Africa. There have been calls for the African Union to get involved, and Ethiopia has sent a delegation to South Africa. In Johannesburg, Darren Taylor spoke with xenophobia expert and researcher at the African Center for Migration and Society, Dr. Jean-Pierre Misago.
What is happening today is it's not like it has stopped and then started again. It has been going on, although on a smaller scale, for a long time. This is happening mostly because of the current socioeconomic and political situation.
In recent times, we've heard President Ramaphosa saying migrants are placing a strain on his country. We've also heard Johannesburg Mayor Herman Mashaba saying that foreigners are criminals. We've heard the King of the Zulus using similar words. We've got civil society groups now saying that comments such as I've referred to have set the scene for the latest wave of anti-foreigner attacks.
There is poverty, there's unemployment, there's economic hardships. But we don't agree that economic situation only can explain the violence. But when it is combined with political rhetoric that blames foreign nationals for all the social ills in the country, migrants become the target for this kind of violence. From our research, we see that when those comments are made by high government official political leaders, they are usually followed by violence.
Now, Dr. Misago, the country's 2011 census reported 5 million foreigners living legally in South Africa. There are also often figures bandied about of 3 million Zimbabweans alone being in the country. Do you have any idea how many migrants are currently residing in South Africa?
It's not easy to know how many are, because we're supposed to get information from the census, from government, but the census is not reliable, but we go with what they tell us. The last figures we have is that the foreign population accounts for 4% of the national population.
So we're sitting here with a population of around about 60 million, and the government says 4% of that 60 million are migrants. Am I correct?
Yes.
What are the implications for adequate immigration policies if the South African government doesn't really know how many foreigners are actually here?
That's a big issue, because not knowing who is here is problematic in terms of knowing how to maximize the benefit migration can bring, and also plan for people living in different locations. By the way, it's not just only about international migrants. It's all about domestic migration, which is much bigger than international migration in the cities, which always complain that they are not able to meet the demand of the population because of the increasing numbers.
If I could just paint a scenario to you, say you and I are poor South Africans in a township. Now, in a relatively short period of time, there's an influx of, say, Zimbabweans into the area. Then, in a short period of time, the taps run dry. In a short period of time, the land where you wanted to build your sister's shack is no longer available because the Zimbabweans have built on it. I know these scenarios happen all the time because I see them. Now, given this context, Dr. Misago, it's easy for extremists to fan the flames of xenophobia, is it not?
Foreign nationals, when they come, they don't invade land. They don't take houses built for South Africans. What they do, they rent space, they rent property from the locals. They either rent or through corruption from the housing officials. So, who should the anger be directed at? From our research point of view, we see this violence being about governance. Not having proper governance.
You've referred there to one of the solutions as being better governance. Are there other solutions?
Conflict resolution mechanisms are central to any well-being of any society. Without that, nothing is going to work. So that's one thing. The second thing is to hold perpetrators accountable. When we hear people have been arrested, those people get released on bail or on warning. There are known groups and individuals who organize violence for their own socioeconomic and political interests. It's very well organized. There is somebody behind the violence, and those are the ones who should be targeted. And then finally, civil society organizations have to find a way of holding accountable government for the failure to act when, people are being killed and nothing is being done.
That was reporter Darren Taylor speaking with Dr. Jean-Pierre Misago, a xenophobia expert and researcher at the African Center for Migration. The Botswana government has issued a travel warning to its citizens over attacks on foreigners in South Africa. The attacks are likely to affect Botswana, which is dependent on its neighbor for food imports and petroleum products. Mokandisi Dube reports from Gaborone.
Pokie Dumetse is a cross-border trader who buys second-hand clothes in South Africa's Johannesburg for resale in her home country, Botswana. But her business has come to a standstill since attacks targeting foreign nationals in South Africa broke out last week. Gidumezi has been forced to stay home until the situation improves.
The attacks in South Africa are really bad for business. They're affecting us all because as neighboring countries, we do business together. Ever since these attacks started, I haven't been able to deliver on my business because I buy my stock from South Africa. Now you can imagine, everything has been put on hold for how long? I don't know.
While Botswana immigration officials say it has been business as usual at entry points, tax operators are not taking chances with some, like Mompati Kobe, grounding their fleet. Kobe argues it is too risky to drive to Johannesburg, where most of the attacks have occurred.
This unrest in South Africa has really affected our businesses because it's now difficult for us to take our vehicles there because you never know, they might burn them. And Some of our services, they are not insured, so for now we have grounded our services until the situation calms down.
Botswana imports 2/3 of its goods from South Africa, which includes petroleum products. While the country has allayed fears of looming fuel shortages, fuel truck drivers are not prepared to risk their lives by crossing into South Africa. Albert Piri, a Zambian truck driver who works for a South African fuel company, has been stuck in Botswana since the start of the week, afraid of driving back to Johannesburg.
Our trucks are grounded. I've been at the border since the start of the week. We can't cross for fear of violence. I don't even know when I'll cross to South Africa. I fear for my life. But at the same time, I still want to keep my job.
Gaborone-based political analyst Lawrence Wokeditse says all affected countries should voice their concerns to the South African government and bring back their emissaries if necessary.
In the event that the South Africans are not responding adequately, then they need to immediately consider all options. And all options include recalling their envoys or their ambassadors.
While Botswana issued a warning to its citizens about traveling to South Africa, the country's president, Mokgweetsi Masisi, flew to Cape Town on Tuesday for the World Economic Forum on Africa. The Democratic Republic of Congo, Malawi and Rwanda leaders have pulled out of the meeting amid concerns of the deteriorating situation. Mqondisi Dube for VOA News, Gaborone.
Sudan's new Prime Minister, Abdallah Hamdok, is expected to announce his cabinet today, but there have been delays amid questions about the eligibility of two proposed ministers. Officials say the would-be justice minister has dual citizenship, a situation that would eliminate him unless a last-minute solution can be worked out. No reasons have been given for why the commerce minister's nomination is being held up. The other 12 members of the cabinet include the first female foreign minister and a former World Bank economist as finance minister. He'll have to deal with a daunting economic crisis that set off months of protests, which forced longtime leader Omar al-Bashir from office. It will be the first cabinet since Bashir's ouster, as Sudan prepares for democratic elections in just over 3 years. A joint civilian and military transitional council is running the country in the meantime. Hope, peace, and reconciliation were the three main pillars of Pope Francis's message today as he made his first papal visit to Mozambique. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Maputo.
Sunny Mozambique gave a warm and colorful welcome to Pope Francis as he toured the capital Thursday and spoke to lawmakers, youth, and clergy. Thousands of young Catholics packed a Maputo stadium to hear him speak of hope, peace, and reconciliation to a nation that, for decades, has struggled with conflict. He was greeted Wednesday night by President Filipe Nyusi, who is running for re-election in October in a contentious poll in which rival parties have already begun heavy mudslinging at each other. But the pontiff did not pander to Mozambique's leadership when pointing out their higher responsibility to honor a recent peace deal. Both sides in the peace talks have recently accused the other of violating the fragile deal signed in August. As we know, he says, peace is not merely absence of war, but a tireless commitment, especially on the part of those of us charged with greater responsibility, to recognize, protect, and concretely restore the dignity, so often overlooked or ignored, of our brothers and sisters, so that they can see themselves as the principal protagonists of the destiny of their nation. And papal visits always come with plenty of pomp. He was greeted Thursday with dancing, music, red carpets, bands, and even some plentifully plumed peacocks at the presidential palace. But those who came to hear him say they took a deep message from his words. 34-year-old civil society campaigner Brenda Campos says she took to heart his entreaties for Mozambicans to look beyond their differences.
His key message was that diversity is important, that you need to be united, even though we have diversity in our country. It doesn't matter. We have to be united if you want to reconcile, if you want peace, if you want to build a better Mozambique.
And seminarian De Klerk Nazare, who is 24, says the pontiff gave him a lot of material on which to reflect, spiritually and academically. But, he said, on this colorful, triumphant day, it all came down to one thing. Everyone is happy with the visit of the Holy Father in Mozambique, he says. The Pope will leave for Madagascar on Friday, and from there to Mauritius. But, the faithful say, his message of peace and tolerance will be with Mozambique for a long time to come. Anita Powell, VOA News, Maputo.
19 past the hour, you are listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Cameroon is dispatching more than 1,000 troops to help bring peace to its troubled neighbor, the Central African Republic. The troops are leaving, as analysts say, they are already stretched in handling such internal crises as piracy in the Gulf of Guinea, the Boko Haram insurgency, and the separatist crisis that has left at least 3,000 dead in 3 years. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaounde.
The The Cameroon military band plays as the first contingent of over 300 peacekeeping troops leaves for the neighboring Central African Republic on September 4. Cameroon's defense minister, Joseph Beti Asomo, says they have been well trained to join the UN peacekeeping mission of more than 13,000 troops, police and civilians to restore peace to the Central African Republic while respecting the rights and dignity of the people they are protecting.
Always determined to fulfill his regional and international commitments as concerns collective security, the head of state, commander-in-chief of the armed forces, has provided the Central African Republic with multifaceted support in order to enable the country to get its institutions, which have already been damaged, back on the feet.
Beti Asomo said Cameroon was deploying 1,300 troops and civilians who, by protecting the Central African Republic, will also be protecting Cameroon. Cameroon hosts about 250,000 CAR refugees and rebels quite often cross over and holds Cameroonian farmers and cattle ranchers for ransom. They also hide across the porous border with Cameroon when challenged in the Central African Republic. The crisis began in the troubled country in 2013 when a mainly Muslim rebel movement called the Seleka overthrew President Francois Bozize, a Christian. That move triggered the rise of a predominantly Christian militia called the Anti-Balaka. Thousands have been killed and a quarter of the population of 4.5 million have fled their homes. CAR Ambassador to Cameroon Martial Beti Maras says his country has been counting on the international community to help it out of the crisis.
C'est une fierté pour haute autorité centrafricaine.
He says the people and president of CAR are proud to know that they will have support to bring back badly needed peace and order to their country from well-trained Cameroonian peacekeepers. Donatien Chega, a visiting lecturer at the University of Yaoundé, says the decision to dispatch Cameroon troops to the neighboring state may seriously undermine efforts to secure its own territory and the Gulf of Guinea, where there are regular reports of pirate attacks.
Ce qui nous concerne, nous-mêmes d'abord les Camerounais, nous avons tout le monde, trop de problèmes.
He says it is not a good decision for Cameroon, which is already facing enormous challenges, fighting Boko Haram terrorists on its northern border with Nigeria, containing the spillover of the crisis in CAR with sporadic rebel attacks on its territory, and especially stopping separatists from their fight to create an English-speaking state to send over 1,000 of its troops to a foreign country. He says the Cameroonian military is overstretched and this decision may also hamper its effort to fight piracy in the Gulf of Guinea, separatists in the English-speaking regions, and Boko Haram terrorists. Cameroon, however, says it must contribute to bring peace and order in the Central African Economic and Monetary Community, of which the Central African Republic, Chad, Equatorial Guinea, Gabon, and the Republic of the Congo are also members. Cameroon has over 24 million of the 54 million people in the economic bloc. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Smallholder farmers in Africa are vulnerable to climate shocks and extreme weather patterns. They also suffer from lack of access to credit financing to invest in their farms. But in Kenya, a new credit insurance scheme is offering a solution to rural farmers. From Masi, Kenya, VOA's Ruben Chama reports.
In Masi, Machakos County, one of Kenya's semi-arid areas, a training session is underway to understand farmers' concerns and give them skills on modern agricultural techniques. Beatrice Ndavi, 58, was among a group of farmers who participated.
Most of the challenges that we have here in Ukambani, it is lack of water. And because of the rain not being reliable, our crops, they dry before they are mature. And for that reason, we have a shortage of food.
The drought risks make credit unavailable or too risky for the farmers to invest further in their operations. But through a grant from the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, they are set to benefit from an innovative market-based insurance program. Safraz Shah is a manager of micro and agriculture insurance at the APA Insurance Company.
The beauty of this is that it's not only insurance product. If you look at a farmer, I have an insurance, but if he doesn't have money to buy seeds, to buy fertilizer, he's not going to farm. It's a solution for a farmer where we are enabling and helping him to get a loan from a bank. Then insurance has bundled it, so he doesn't need to go to a different person. It's a one-stop shop solution. And it has been tested in areas where there is no other insurance support.
The program is called Risk Contingent Credit. It provides farmers with vouchers in the form of an insured loan to buy farm inputs such as seeds, fertilizers and pesticides, as well as training. The system, which aims to boost food production, is through a partnership bringing together the University of Greenwich, the International Food Policy Research Institute and local partners. Apruba Shi is the lead researcher and a business development economist at the Natural Resources Institute, University of Greenwich.
The program is basically bundling insurance and credit in a scientific way. If the rainfall is evenly distributed, good rainfall in one of the phases and there is no rainfall in other, crop will be destroyed. So the question is how to capture this rainfall distribution in the index insurance that will be embedded in a credit model.
The program uses new modeling techniques to trigger payments to farmers if average rainfall is too low, as Shah explains.
This year we are expecting around 800 farmers to be covered. So this is just an idea for us, a pilot, to see how we can scale up. So if we are able to successfully demonstrate that the product can work, if there is a bad weather and we pay claims, people will be more excited in the coming years.
Willis Ogutu is an agricultural economist with Equity Group Foundation, one of the local partners involved in training the farmers.
Basically, we are training them to be able to manage their finances well, to know where they can get funds, because many farmers do not have enough funds to invest in increasing their production in terms of quantity and quality, and even value addition funds. We are also helping them to plan well for these funds, so how they can also use the loans properly and also be able to repay them. Because we noticed that in many cases, when farmers borrow loans, they misuse their loans, and then now they have the burden of repaying a loan that didn't help them.
However, Liangzi Yu, a senior representative from International Food Policy Research Institute, says the new program faces some impediments.
Rolling out right now, I would say the bank still needs some incentive, even from policy side or from government side, whatever incentive to lend to poor farmers. I keep saying, you know, if you are poor, nobody wants to lend it to you.
According to government estimates, Kenya recorded some $12 billion in losses as a result of drought in a four-year period between 2008 and 2011. Ruben Chama, VOA News, in Masii, Machakos, Kenya.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Cedric Franklin, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.